This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Our natural resource reality has changed, and we need to adapt to it. I mean, water's just different. Temperatures are higher. Droughts are more frequent.
The CERES Conference is an annual gathering where organizations as different as the Sierra Club and Shell come together to discuss ways to accelerate the transition to a sustainable world. On the eve of the conference, which takes place May 1st and 2nd in San Francisco this year, we thought it would be worthwhile to get a sneak peek at some of the CERES speakers. This week on Sea Change Radio, we hear from two CERES speakers. First, we're joined by Lester Snow, the Executive Director of the California Water Foundation. He gives us an overview of some compelling water issues concerning the American West. Then, I speak to Bennett Freeman of Calvert Investments, an investment company that's been on the forefront of the socially responsible investment movement since the 1980s. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Lester Snow. He's the Executive Director of the California Water Foundation. Lester, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you, Alex. Glad to be here.
First, tell us what the California Water Foundation does and why it's important for people outside of California as well.
Certainly. Kind of the short version is the California Water Foundation is a philanthropically funded effort to move California to sustainable water management for the economy and the environment. And I guess there's two things, even in making that statement. One, an assumption and a fact that we're not currently managing our water in a sustainable fashion, and neither is most of the Western United States and much of the world. So it's not only a local problem, California problem, national problem, but it's actually an international problem of trying to achieve sustainable water management.
And tell us some of the most pressing issues in California. If anybody's driven from San Francisco to Los Angeles on Highway 5, they would inevitably see these signs from angry farmers saying, Nancy Pelosi caused this.
Yeah.
Take a step back and explain where that animosity stems from.
Well, there's a long history, of course. I guess one of the summary things to say is that our natural resource reality, meaning the weather patterns and temperature and just different issues like that, are changing faster than our water management system and institutions are capable of adapting. So there's actually an increase in risk and uncertainty in water supplies as they become more critical, and that makes people very uncomfortable, and so they lash out at whomever in response to that. So we end up being in a business, a water management business, that is driven by crisis response rather than, you know, natural resource management of the problem. And so we've created a situation with over 100 years of federal and state policy that has resulted in losing over 90% of the wetlands habitat, over 90% of the riparian habitat in the Central Valley. Climate change has dramatically changed the way water occurs. That results in shortages, and people want something done about it. So that's why you see billboards about Congress not acting. But it's not just Congress's issue. It's an issue that we all need to respond to in terms of better groundwater management, more efficient irrigation, more efficient homes that we build. So there's a lot of pieces to the puzzle, and that's essentially what the California Water Foundation has been formed to deal with, the more comprehensive solution.
And how does the California Water Foundation interact with private industry? We profiled the battle in Kern County between oil interests and their thirst for oil for water to try to inject water into to oil wells there and get more life out of these
right.
wells. We think of water as a public good, but it really has
yeah.
become quite a privatized commodity as well. How often do those two overlap in your daily work?
Well, you know, actually, we're encouraging business interests to engage in water policy. And while you can have some direct conflict, like you were describing, with oil and production out of deep wells and needing water to get production, the issue we're trying to address is that a foundational issue for a stable economy is a stable water supply, and our supply has actually become less predictable over the last 20 years instead of more predictable. So we have increasing population, we have a need for global competitiveness, and yet we're seeing an erosion of water supply reliability. And we think responsible business needs to step up and be part of the discussion to invest in what I would call a balanced portfolio way of managing our water resources. And by portfolio, I mean moving away from the thought that the next big construction project, like a new dam or something like that, is going to fix our problem. That's just not the case. Modern water resource management is almost like your own retirement investment. You don't buy one stock anymore and assume that's going to take care of your needs. You diversify. And that's what modern water management is, and we think business has a role to play in moving us in that direction.
Lester, you're going to be speaking at the upcoming series conference. What kind of message are you going to try to get across to your audience?
My big message, and what I'll talk about at series, is just our natural resource reality has changed, and we need to adapt to it. I mean, water's just different. Temperatures are higher. Droughts are more frequent. We all tend to look at the 10-year Australian drought that they called the big dry over there as this freaky thing that could never happen here. And I think we need to prepare for that sort of thing happening here. And that's why we keep pushing to get business engagement with the water folks to do business differently.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with the Executive Director of the California Water Foundation, Lester Snow. You mentioned how we need to change some habits, such as improving how we deal with wastewater. What are some of the other ways that, off the top of your head, the most important ways we need to change in terms of managing this important resource?
Well, one is maybe change a little bit of our understanding. There's a new normal. I think, as most people are aware, there's been this debate that's gone on for a long time around climate change. I think it's a completely unnecessary debate, but the fact that it's taken place has resulted in people not actually paying attention to our climate has already changed. Water occurs in California very differently than it did 50 years ago. More comes as rain instead of snow, so it means you have less snowpack, and so the rivers flow differently. We have a much greater potential for protracted droughts, higher flood peaks. So the point is that we already have a new reality, and that's the first thing for people to recognize, is that water doesn't occur the way that it did 50 years ago, and certainly 100 years ago. And once you recognize that we probably have more severe droughts and more sporadic supplies of water, then there's a whole variety of things that we can do in terms of water use in the home. We've already seen a major change in the appliances that are available that are more water efficient. Many cities are dealing with something called stormwater runoff. So when rains in a city, water picks up contamination, runs into the ocean or lakes and causes contamination. They need to clean that up. We look at that stormwater that's now a liability and recognize it's an asset. Clean it up, get it back in your groundwater basin, and you've just added to your water supplies. Agriculture, which competes in a global market, probably can produce more crops with the amount of water they have access to now through more efficient irrigation systems. So sometimes they call it more crop per drop type of approach to things. We have a tremendous amount of wastewater that gets discharged, and yet we still have parks and golf courses that are on potable water. There's no need for that. We need to change them to recycled water. So there's just many, many options that we have that if we can focus, we can substantially change, I'll call it our water footprint, how much water it takes to maintain our economy and our lifestyle.
What's the matter with me? I don't have much to say. Daylight sneaking through the window and I'm still in this old night cafe. Walking to and fro beneath the moon, out to where the trucks are rolling slow. Sit down on this bank of sand and watch the river flow.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with the executive director of the California Water Foundation, Lester Snow. I've heard of the progress that Las Vegas has made in terms of keeping and managing its water more effectively. Can you give us example of leaders in the California area and then maybe some communities or cities that really have a long way to go?
Yeah, and that's a very good question. And in fact, while we think California needs to work to move forward in water management, anything you would want somebody to do is being done somewhere in California. And so it's a matter of taking what people have innovated and then spreading that. One of the better examples on conservation that gets used is actually the city of Los Angeles, that despite substantial population growth in their service area, use about the same amount of water that they used in 1980. So that would be, you know, over 30 years of population growth with about the same amount of water. And they've done that through aggressive and effective urban conservation programs, as well as expanding the amount of wastewater that they use. There's a Orange County Water District, obviously in Orange County, has been an innovator in reclaiming wastewater probably for over 40 years, where they reclaim almost all of the wastewater generated in the area and clean it up to extremely high standards, recharge it into the groundwater basin so it becomes part of their potable water supply again. We have seen irrigation districts in the Central Valley move from flood irrigation, which in many situations is not efficient. It can be, but in many cases it's not, to extremely sophisticated computer-run drip irrigation systems that put precisely the amount of water that that crop needs to the right level of the root zone. So we've seen all of these different applications. And another that I'll mention is the Sonoma County Water Agency that not only is improving the efficiency of their water use, but they're seeking to be carbon neutral in the way that they provide water so that they're generating energy where they have an opportunity to, and so that their water efficiency contributes to their greenhouse gas reductions.
And on the flip side, what kind of areas, when you drive around the state, do you say, oh my goodness, these guys need have a long way to go?
Well, probably the best example of non-sustainable water management is in areas that rely exclusively on groundwater and have been so over-pumping the groundwater reserves that the Earth's surface has fallen. And so we have areas in California where the Earth's surface has dropped 30, 40 feet below where it was before the pumping started. So it's called land subsidence, and it occurs slowly over time, but it is very dramatic. I mean, obviously, when you're pulling that much water out of the ground year after year after year, it's unsustainable. At some point, you can't do that. And then in addition to not being able to do that, you've dramatically affected the Earth's surface and perhaps flood gradients. And maybe you have canals that now flow backwards because you've changed the gradient. So that's probably the best example of, I'll call it unsustainable water management. And in those cases, you may have farmers that are getting some of that water that are being very, very efficient. But it's just the two things can't sustain. You can be efficient, but if you continue to overdraft the groundwater basin, you are headed for trouble. Sometimes we refer to this groundwater overdraft as our version of deficit spending, that you're actually meeting economic need with water that's not replenished.
Where are these subsidences occurring?
Well, it's generally at the south end of the San Joaquin Valley. So if you can think of maybe south and a little bit west of Fresno, southwest of Fresno in that area, area that are very productive agriculture. Our view from the foundation is that it's very beneficial agriculture. We just need to figure out a better method of management so we can be an agricultural state that is competitive in the global market, but we can't do it by deficit spending our water supply.
The executive director of the California Water Foundation, Lester Snow, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you very much, Alan.
If you ever find yourself wanting to know more about the music we play here on Sea Change Radio, go to seachangeradio.com and click on the Music tab at the top of the page.
I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Bennett Freeman. He's the Senior Vice President of Sustainability Research and Advocacy for Calvert Investments. Bennett, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you. Delighted to be on Sea Change Radio.
So first, tell us a little bit about the efforts that Calvert has made in the socially sustainable and responsible investment field, and it's kind of carved out a nice little niche for itself in this area. Can you just give us a brief little thumbnail sketch?
The whole proposition has evolved in a way around SRI that we think makes it much more durable and effective than ever before. You know, a lot of people came to Calvert in particular, SRI in general, because they wanted to invest in alignment with their values. And a lot of people still do. And Calvert welcomes that. And our funds certainly provide a home for people who want to identify with environmental concerns, human rights, women's issues. But what's really shifted is the growing awareness that attention to environmental, social, and governance issues aren't just a moral concern, as they are for some, a political concern for others, but really make good investment sense. And we think that companies that take environmental, social, and governance concerns seriously are better positioned to perform for their investors, for their employees, the communities where they operate. And by being SRI investors who really take these environmental social governance issues into consideration, we feel that we're able to see around corners and see over horizons to different areas of risk and opportunity where other investors may not be.
So explain to the layman how the SRI industry has grown over the last decade. And from Calvert's perspective, where are the sweet spots, so to speak, in terms of your clientele who are interested in making socially responsible investments part of their portfolio?
Well, you know, we have grown very substantially over the years. We're no longer just a small niche player in the investment world, and we've grown, you know, I think partly because our funds have performed pretty well on average over the years. That's the key, of course, to growing assets under management. You've got to deliver solid returns to your investors, as we have. But, you know, the other reason is that there's just a growing awareness on the part of the public, including on the part of investors, of the importance of corporate social responsibility, the importance of sustainability, the importance of the environmental dimension of the planet, the importance of climate change in particular. So I think we've been riding a wave now the last decade or so where that greater awareness it really plays to our strength that we began to build, you know, 30 years ago.
People are becoming more familiar with these two terms when they're looking at the socially responsible investment area. It's SRI, socially responsible investment, or sustainable and responsible investment. And then also there's ESG, environmental, social, and governance issues. Your panel that you're speaking on at the Ceres conference deals with ESG data management and analytics.
That's right.
First, tell us, what does that mean? And if you were steering that conversation, what are the most pressing ESG data management issues?
No, that's a great question. And we're really talking about two sides of the same coin. It depends on where you sit. So, you know, for those who have some values orientation for part of their investing, you know, they've come to SRIs like Calvert over the years. But as I've said already, they're coming to us more and more because they see a real investment proposition centered around risk and opportunity with us. And that gets to the ESG side of the coin, where ESG really focuses on risk and opportunity. It's not so much about values. It's more about valuation of companies in light of various environmental, social, and governance factors. In terms of ESG data management, there's just a couple of quick points here. It's a big subject, but first point I would make is that it's such a data-rich and complex environment that we operate in now. There are so many more environmental, social, and governance data sources, data vendors. There are so many reporting standards out there, and all of this stems from the same fact, which is over the last dozen years, all of this corporate social responsibility and sustainability set of issues has become so much more mainstream. So a big industry, I don't know if it's industry, cottage industry, whatever you want to call it, has sprung up to really service investors like Calvert and many others. So it's a very cluttered landscape that we have to do our best to cut through. So that's one point. But the more important second point here is that it's not the data per se that's reported that matters most, although we do rely heavily on the extent and quality of disclosure we get from companies. What matters most for us is our ability to analyze that data and to see trends, to see issues, to see problems, to see opportunities. In other words, to interpret what the data can tell us. And in that context, we are more and more cooperating within Calvert with our analysts who may just be portfolio managers, analysts working on equities or fixed income, are now working more closely than ever with the team of analysts I lead who really do sustainability analysis. And, you know, the point here is that an integrated approach gives one a better, wider investment perspective. So my team, for example, will look at Apple's problems over the last couple of years with its largest supplier in the world, Foxconn, that makes the lion's share of its iPads and iPhones, and look at the labor issues with Foxconn, the excessive amount of overtime, the low pay, the workplace safety issues. And from a social policy and values perspective, we won't like it. But our equities analysts will also not like it for the same reasons, but also because they will then anticipate that there may be disruptions in Apple's supply chain due to Foxconn when the inevitable happens, when Foxconn has to change its workplace practices, raise wages, lose some of its workforce. That's exactly what has happened the last year. There has been a lot of churning in that workforce making Apple products in China, and it is one of the factors, and I want to be very careful here, just one of the factors among others that have contributed to the significant decline in Apple stock in recent months. So that's the sort of integrated analysis that we can do now on the basis of these data sources that we have. So the bottom line is that you need the data. Companies need to be transparent. They need to disclose the data. But what really matters is what the analysts, the sustainability analysts, the credit analysts, the equities analysts do with the data. Overall, on a net basis, we see progress.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Bennett Freeman. He's the Senior Vice President for Sustainability Research and Advocacy at Calvert Investment. He's also going to be a speaker at the upcoming CERES conference. People can go to CERES, that's CERES.org, to learn more about that conference. How much leverage have you seen evolve in the SRA industry over the last decade? Are companies coming to you really hoping for that green, that good housekeeping seal of approval, so to speak?
They sure are. There are a number of companies that have come to us because they think that they're making serious progress. They want to explain that progress to us. We tend to only see those companies that we think that there's a reasonable prospect in the short to medium term, 3 to 5 years, say, where we could see them meeting all of our environmental, social, and governance criteria. You know, we're not going to break our pick, so to speak, on a company that's kind of in the outer solar system. But, you know, we've spent a lot of time in recent years with Ford Motor, for example. We're going to be spending some more time with GM. We spent a lot of time with Coca-Cola, Pepsi, McDonald's. I mean, these were all companies that were hardly so-called SRI names, our favorites, yet they're all companies making very significant positive strides. And a couple of them we've recognized for doing so, and they're now in our portfolios. So, but there's not a week that goes by where we're not getting asked by one company or another to sit down with them and review what they're up to. But we just have to pick carefully among them.
That's interesting. He's the Senior Vice President at Calvert Investments. People can go to calvert.com to learn more about their products. Bennett Freeman, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Alex, thank you so much.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Auntie Ballas, Bob Dylan, and Papa Molly. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.